My name is Andrew Stotz, and I'll be your host as we continue our journey into the teachings of Dr. W. Edwards Deming. Today, I'm continuing my discussion with David P. Langford, who has devoted his life to applying Dr. Deming's philosophy to education, and he offers us his practical advice for implementation. Today's topic is thriving on chaos. David, take it away.
Thank you, Andrew. It's good to be back again.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, thriving on chaos. So I started thinking about this because of my work with executive coaching, both with principals and superintendents and people like that. And it's sort of like a pattern, or if I go and visit a campus and actually start to see what's happening at a campus, either a university or school or whatever. And it applies to Deming's concept of profound knowledge and the concept of psychology, and how does psychology fit in with the variation and systems thinking and so on and so forth. So this whole idea about thriving on chaos comes from, you have to start to think about the neuroscience behind it as well, about, you know, like who's in charge or who's in command of something. So if you're talking about, you know, a military commander, well, that's all based on your rank. Or you might have the formal position in a company, right? Your vice president or your president. And along with that becomes a certain level of authority too. Well, in a school, it's the same kind of a thing. In a classroom, a teacher has a built-in level of authority in that classroom. And especially like in younger years, elementary schools or primary schools, you're physically bigger than your students or your clients or your workers or whatever, however you want to think about students in a school system. So sometimes people get by with a management style that it's just based on, you know, they're just bigger. And so they're threatening and it's scarier, you know. And imagine if, you know, you had a boss that was like 20 feet tall and compared to you and stuff, it'd be kind of a scary thing, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. But
like he could just squash me by just, you know, putting his foot down.
Yeah. So just because you're getting stuff done, right, doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing things well or planning things through or something. You're just getting things done because maybe you're the loudest voice in the room or the squeakiest wheel, or you're the, you know, all these other kinds of things. But along with that, when you have that formal position, I sort of found that people have to go through a phase where they're tired of the chaos. They're tired of the craziness. But at the same time, the craziness gives you authority, right? I'm the authority figure. And so I've got to fix this, and I got to always be in control. And so, you know, Deming talked about, you know, moving from one burning fire to the next, to the next, to the next, and managing with a way of thinking like that. So if you really start applying Deming kind of philosophies to your management style, whether that's in a classroom, school, company, whatever it might be, I've always found that over time, things start to calm down. attitudes calm down, like students just know more about what to do, how to do things, because, you know, maybe they have flow charts or operational definitions, and so they start to actually take control of the situation, et cetera. And that actually becomes threatening to somebody who's spent a career thriving on the chaos, right? And, you know, you walk into a classroom and none of the kids are doing what it is they're supposed to do. And so you get really angry and you get upset and you yell at them, and then everybody does what they're supposed to do. And that puts you in a position of authority. That's much different than if I walked into a classroom and the students didn't even know I was gone, right? They all know what they're supposed to do, how they're supposed to do it. They're all working together. They're all communicating with each other back and forth, right? And there is no chaos. I'll never forget, I worked with a university in Southern California, and I was coaching a number of the professors, and this one professor, I get a phone call one day, and he's whispering. He said, "I had a flat on the way to school this morning, and I was 20 minutes late. And we have a philosophy at the school that if the professor's more than 10 minutes late, you don't have to stay. You can leave." So he said, I was totally sure that I was going to get to my class and everybody was going to be gone, right? There wouldn't be anybody there. He said, I came into my class and they didn't even know I was gone. They were all working in teams and they were working on their projects and communicating and going through stuff. And so he calls me whispering. He said, I need some quality therapy. They don't need me. Well, it's just the opposite. Those kinds of environments don't happen by accident. And he had steadily been turning the management, so to speak, of the class over to the students. Mm-hmm. And you know what to do. You know what you do when you hit the room. Why would you even come to class? You know, what's my role? What's your role? How do we define things? And so he actually had turned into much more of what we all, you know, want to do is become a facilitator of learning. That's a very common term in education, but people don't often realize you truly become a facilitator of learning. It's kind of threatening because you've been thriving on chaos for years and running stuff and being the person in control, and everybody has to come to you for an answer and for a decision. And that in itself psychologically is, you know, a pretty heady thing. And you start to change that, it becomes threatening.
And I mean, when you, from your own experience, I'm guessing that there's a small proportion of people that will never change that style. Everybody line up when they come in, you know, everybody be quiet. Okay, you do this, you do that. And then you've got this group that on the other end of the spectrum, it's like, you guys do it. But then you've got a lot of people in the middle. How do you convince the people in the middle that shifting, I guess what you could say is empowering one group disempowers another. It must.
Yeah. Well, Deming says, you know, leaders have three sources of power. So yes, you have your formal position. And then you also have your knowledge about things. And then there's the psychology of, you know, how you manage and what you do and all that kind of stuff. But he often talked about formal leaders don't use formal position unless you absolutely have to, because you're not gaining authority or you're not gaining power or authority to change things by going through that. So yes, you have the role. Yes, you have
quality
the position.
Around
yes,
quality.
You have the responsibility. And ultimately the buck stops with you, whether that's a teacher in a classroom or a CEO in a company. But you're only going to use that formal position to make decisions or overstep things, you know, basically in a time of crisis or an emergency. But even then, as soon as you finish that time of crisis or that emergency, you want to spend time trying to figure out, how do we make sure this never happens again? A really great example is, like, every school in the world practices fire drills. Oh, why did we do that? You know, well, a child could go through the entire school system someplace and never, ever have an actual fire, right? Well, we do that because we have to practice that because the danger is so high. And, you know, if something did happen, that special cause, that one special cause, one time in 12 years or 20 years, the cost is so great that we have to practice it. We have to be ready and everything else, because we can't rely on the moment on the leader being there to tell us what to do. Right. Everybody has to know what to do in those kinds of situations. Same thing's true today in lockdowns, right? Schools, things like that. The danger level is so high. We have to practice it nowadays. We have to go through the scenario, even though it's such an extreme, special cause. It may, you know, in a whole teacher's career, 40 years, they may never, ever experience an actual threat going on. But we practice it to make sure it doesn't, you know, this doesn't happen again. So it's the same thing. If you find yourself in chaos again, something's going on, or some project didn't go well, or whatever it is that you went through. Best thing is to, you know, just figure out, how do we get through this? And then secondly, start using the people that were part of the process and part of the dysfunction to actually fix the process. You know, so what do we learn? Yeah, what do we learn from this? So,
And would we equate, when we talk about, let's just say we create a run chart on a production in a factory, and our job is to get the system in control, to reduce variability, you know, that type of thing. I guess that's reducing chaos or chaotic outcomes. So is it a corollary here that as we start to apply the principles in education, one of our goals is to reduce that variation or that chaoticness? I don't know. How does that compare to what we would think in a factory, as an example?
Yeah, that's exactly the same kind of thing. You know, it can be so simple. You know, it's, I remember asking teachers all the time, you know, how's it going today? Oh, I'm having a really bad day. Or, you know, oh, I'm having a great day. Or, oh, these kids are driving me crazy today. You know, it must be going to rain, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they're just constantly victims of their own reality. And so until you have that understanding of variation, are able to sort of step back, it could be that it's going to rain, and that's a sort of a special cause, except if you're in Thailand, it rains all the time, so it's a common cause, right? But you know, and that could be having some kind of effect, but until you have some level of data to try to look at over time, then you're on this constant psychological roller coaster. Great day, I'm bad day, or I hate this job, or I don't like this job, or right? Because you're just riding those waves of psychology, of the variation that's going on. And especially in schools, there's just so much random variation. Like we try to control it to some level, but for the most part, still, you really have no idea the variation in students that are going to come into your classroom every year, right? Mm. So they could be coming from different countries. They could have different languages. They could have, you know, different backgrounds, you know, all kinds of things within that. Now, like in a K-12 system, like we have in the United States or other places around the world, we do control that to some degree, because a certain percentage of those students are going to stay in that system for the entire time that they're going through that system. And then high percentage sometimes are transient students that are coming in and out all the time. Mm. The real key is, are you just thriving on that chaos of that? And it's just, oh, woe is me. And oh, look at this. We got all these transient kids and kids that speak 52 different languages and everything else. Or are you starting to understand that, oh no, this is probably the norm of our system. And what are we doing about it? How are we managing differently to bring all these cultures together and to manage it on a whole different level?
So maybe I'll try to summarize what you've been talking about. First of all, you're saying, you know, this is part of the psychology aspect of the theory of profound knowledge that Dr. Deming talks about. And, you know, when you talk about psychology and a statistician, you know, kind of background or education that Dr. Deming was, it's always kind of interesting, like, wow, he really, really thought a lot about the human person, you know, the person involved in whatever activity is going on. You also talked about, you know, who's in charge or in command. You talked about, like, in military, it's a rank. In a business, it may be like, I'm a VP, I'm an executive VP. So we see that. But one of the things you mentioned, which is so interesting, I hadn't thought about, is that the teachers are just physically bigger. And so there's a certain level of power right there. And the other thing you were talking about is how people may be tired of the craziness, but the chaos makes them feel in control. Like, get everybody lined up, I tell everybody what to do. And they're perpetuating the problem that they're kind of suffering from. And then you mentioned that Deming's methods, when you start to implement them in a classroom, in a school, that things start to calm down, that, you know, and that is a threat to the person that wants to thrive on chaos. And then finally, the last part you talked about was the three types of power: formal power that's derived from knowledge, and power that's derived from psychology. And you said, ultimately, you know, you only want to use the power from that comes from formal position in very rare cases. But the idea is try to get the, I guess what I would say is by empowering students, you're reducing your power and let them, you know, produce from that. Anything you would add to that?
No, you got it spot on. So,
There we are.
Deming talked a lot about that. Somebody that becomes more and more knowledgeable about managing situations and helping people becomes very powerful. And you may not have the formal position. So you could be a teacher in a building that has 160 teachers, but you become actually very powerful, in some cases more powerful than the principal, because you're constantly applying knowledge and thinking to situations versus just reacting to the chaos.
It's interesting because I think about in my young days, what I did is I learned Excel. I learned how to use Microsoft Excel intensely. And that was when it was still pretty basic, but still the point was that.
And that's when you could memorize all the formulas.
Exactly. Exactly. And therefore people would always go see Andrew. He can help you solve that. And I had derived a certain amount of power through my knowledge. And I love that. And I love people coming to me and going, how do I do this? Oh, that's easy. Just do it like that. And my power and I don't know, maybe respect for my knowledge rose over time. And so I definitely see that. In fact, I would say that was a big part of my own education. My pursuit of education is I saw knowledge as a source of power for me, or a source of kind of controlling the situation for good or bad.
Yeah, when we talk about, Deming talked about the three sources of power, you know, when I said psychology, I was really talking about personality. Mm. So somebody, you may have worked with people that they just have a great personality. They're just fun to work with and easy to get along with and everything. Well, they actually get a lot of stuff done, right? So the most effective managers are concentrating on knowledge and personality as a ways to get this stuff done and not just issuing orders through my formal position. So.
Well, that is a great discussion on thriving on chaos and the pros and cons of it. David, on behalf of everyone at the Deming Institute, I want to thank you again for the discussion. For listeners, remember to go to deming.org to continue your journey. Also, you can learn more about David at langfordlearning.com. This is your host, Andrew Stotz, and I'll leave you with one of my favorite quotes from Dr. Deming. People are entitled to joy in work.